This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation. He is also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. This is episode 230, and we are talking about a 7-0 Cardinals team after they beat the pants off the Houston Texans. And, you know, we've got a big, big Thursday night game this week. So you're going to get this pod. You're going to get this show like the day before or the day of the game the Cardinals play the Packers. So hopefully you listen to it early so you're not listening to a preview after we've already played the game. The Cardinals hopefully are 8-0. But we have matched. The Cardinals now have matched their best start ever. We already, like, in our lifetimes, and I'm the old guy here, I've got kids in college now, three kids in college, and my last kid's graduating this year. In my entire lifetime, the Cardinals had not started 7-0. They did that in 1974. That's 3 years before I was born. That's before my parents even married. And we were in St. Louis, and I didn't know anything, but, you know, I didn't know anything about the NFL until kind of like the Cardinals came to town in 1988. And so this is unprecedented. This is the most exciting start to a season Cardinals fans have ever had. And Seth, I mean, what can we do with this, just this good fortune right now? I don't think we know how to handle it.
Yeah, it's definitely different than anything we've experienced as fans before. Even as media, we've never experienced anything quite like this in terms of the start.
2015 was kind of like it, but it was different because it was a veteran quarterback. They had the same type of vibes, only this time it's Kyler Murray who's emerging instead of Carson Palmer, who's kind of been there and just had a career year. It's just everything's clicking right now. And we were just talking off the air. It doesn't look like this team has any weaknesses at all at the moment.
Yeah, and so that just makes it entertaining and fun. You know, and every week you just have to enjoy being able to watch this team play and what they bring every week. And you've gotten different, you know, contributors. You've seen different plays. And more than anything, I think you've got to be excited about what you're seeing for not only the present but the future and the potential of this to be a team that competes, obviously not at 8-0 or 7-0. Don't want to jinx it. Sorry, at 7-0 every season, but that plays at a high level every year and is, you know, maybe in that conversation with teams like Green Bay and, you know, the Tampa Bays or whoever Tom Brady's playing for, let's be honest, and those organizations, because their quarterback and their coach allow them to be there. And I mean, you can even throw a team in like New Orleans, who I believe is now 4-2 on the season, you know, losing their soon to be Hall of Fame quarterback and, you know, but they've got enough pieces in place that it doesn't kill them. And those things are, you know, important. And I think that's the way I'm looking at it, is I'm very excited about the present and the potential that this is a special season, because I know how fleeting those are in the NFL.
Oh my goodness, yes.
But I'm also excited because it seems like there's a lot of young talent, and especially that quarterback, he's pretty decent. And, you know, maybe this is, you know, a team that every year in and year out is going to be able to compete at a level like this, where you're saying, hey, they're one of the, you know, 3-5 best teams in the NFC.
Yeah, it's really, and as we kind of see it, we also, the patience that the Cardinals had with how things started, like it's the exact opposite of what we saw with Steve Wilkes, is that, you know, they looked overmatched at the beginning, and so they hired a guy who, you know, hadn't been great in college. But Cliff Kingsbury, you really, really have to admire how he's coming into his own. And a lot of it comes with winning, but he is coaching his tail off. He's doing great. And he's entering the conversations of, like, you know, McVay was the talk of everything. But let's give Cliff Kingsbury some credit here. He's taken the roster and improved it in every way this year. And so, the hot seat that some kind of thought he had entering this year, I don't think it was ever a hot seat. I mean, this was an important year for, you know, contractually, both for Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury. And the patience that, especially, you know, we were both on board with, hey, Keim's got to go. You know, he put together that 2018, he's got to go. But Bidwell's patience with him, they got the quarterback that looks like they've had two very good drafts the last 2-3 years, that their drafts appear to be promising. And then the moves that he's making, plus the coaching, and it's all growing together. It's kind of like, it, you know, you wish sometimes that you'd have like the Sean McVay effect, where you come in and then you're a championship team practically out the gates. But that patience has been critical, and they are now a complete team that has the right balance of youth, athleticism, experience. Players that aren't over the hill, but are just they're not over the hill completely, but they're going down. It'll happen probably quickly, but they've got this group that's just, this is a roster. My goodness, this is like, they've got to keep riding this, because I don't know if this is going to be as good a chance as the Cardinals have, because of the balance of the rookie contract for Kyler, the players they have on the roster. It's really fun. I was like, it's just really fun.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at it, and I think Vance Joseph kind of hit it on the head today, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember his exact quote, but something along the lines of, you know, the maturation in year three was important, because you don't typically get that long. And to your point, that's what we saw coming into this year, right? Like, people are like, look, it's year three. This is they got to be a contender. And you know, that mentality, I understand, because you see turnarounds in the NFL, like you said, like LA with McVay. You see turnarounds in the NFL year to year, and you go, well, why not my team? But one of the things I think that gets slightly overlooked in those turnarounds, and let's be honest, like, we don't know if that's where the Cardinals are, if they're a one-year team, or if they're a true prolonged contender. But if you build it correctly, you're not a team like Atlanta, you know, where you have this amazing Super Bowl run and then you're in the gutter, or Philadelphia, or you know, these other teams. And, you know, quite frankly, you and I, having been long-suffering Cardinals fans and covering the team, we'd probably take a Philadelphia situation where they win a Super Bowl and then probably go in the gutter. But
I was talking about this with my, I think it was my son Diego the other day. I'm like, you know, Philadelphia hasn't done anything, but I take it. You know, had 2014 or 2015 happened better and they'd gotten that championship, yeah, it would have sucked if everything fell apart. But let me tell you, you get that championship, you can say, I remember that. It's like for Diamondbacks fans, like those of us who are old enough to remember that championship in 2001, it doesn't feel like it's 20 years ago. It was 20 years ago they won that, but it doesn't feel like it, because that experience that you have as a fan, I mean, I've never experienced it with any other team other than the Diamondbacks. It sticks with you, I guess, for a lifetime, because that's how it feels.
Right, and so that's the thing, is you look at it, and And so people want that quick turnaround, and they want that. I mean, that's just life now. They want that fast food outcome for everything. They don't want to, you know, sit and enjoy the process. And it's hard to enjoy the process. I mean, going from three wins to five wins to eight wins.
Seven wins in seven games.
It is a very slow process. But at the end of the day, sometimes, you know, that's what makes it fun too, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's proving that we kind of said, okay, year one, that they did exactly what they did. Year two, last year, they were a little bit ahead of schedule, but then ultimately had the season pretty much everyone expected them to have before the season began. A 7-9 win team that might make the playoffs. They won eight games, barely missed the playoffs. And then in year three, they should be contenders. Only they're better than expected. Again, they are ahead of schedule, but that's right what you wanted them to be. But we could pontificate for some time about just how great the season is, and I know as fans, it's an exciting time. Like, you know, the two of us having, you know, born and raised here in Arizona. For me, the Cardinals are basically the NFL team I've experienced. My parents were not football fans, and so I watched Super Bowls, and then I fell in love with the Cardinals. Is how that happened. I'm a local guy. I watch all the local teams except for the one team college wise. It's not that local. It's in another part of the state down south.
Yeah, NAU is a terrible program.
And NAU is like, aw, they're doing things. It's adorable. It's adorable when. You're like, you don't ever feel like, oh, you, oh, that's cute. You must go there. You must go there. Anyway, let's go ahead and get started with the topic of the show. We'll start and talk about this. I mean, they won 31-5. They defeated the Houston Texans. We'll take our takeaways from the win. But we're going to talk also about the injury situation as they head into week eight. Short week. There's some big names on the injury report. And then, you know, like the Cardinals had to deal with COVID losses. Green Bay is going through the same thing right now. Will it diminish what we think about a win? And then we will preview the game, matchups, predictions, and all that. So let's go ahead and get started with that. The Cardinals beat the Houston Texans 31-5, although it started a little bit shaky-ish as there was a safety, and then there was a field goal. But then after that, the Houston Texans didn't score again the rest of the game. The Cardinals put up 31 unanswered points. They went going away 31-5, and there was really no doubt. It was just the beginning was a little shaky for some reason. And it was the first time they started the game with the ball. So it was the first time that they lost a coin toss, and so they started with the ball. And you know, they had a couple of things. Texans came out, you look at the whole game. Yeah, it was fine. There was nothing I was overly concerned about. The start wasn't good. Like, obviously, you don't want to start the way they did against other teams, more talented or better teams. But I mean, the Cardinals are more than capable of overcoming, you know, a 3-point, 2-point, 5-point deficit, no matter who they're playing.
Yeah, and I mean, it was one of those things that we talked about. I was never worried about the game overall, but I was concerned about their focus and how, you know, if covering was never, you know, is never an issue you and I worry about. I mean, for myself personally, I rarely bet on the Cardinals outcomes of games. I might bet on, you know, prop bets or things of that nature, but the outcomes are just tough. But, you know, the start of the game was kind of what my concern was. And there was no waning on the defense. That was the funny thing. It was just the offense's inability to really kind of sustain any type of drive to start with. And that's the, you know, unfortunate reality of it. But the Cardinals have enough talent and they have enough veteran leadership that it really refocused in, you know, like you said, the final three quarters were basically you know, a scrimmage at best.
It was, they just methodically went down the field. There were highlights. There was, they controlled the game. It was fun. It was everything. It was what you expected to see with the Cardinals Texans game. You got the little bit of fight early, and then they rolled over, and the Cardinals continued to be fantastic. I will say this, out of all of, if you look at kind of what happened to the game, I thought there was only one player who had a bad game. One single player, that was Josh Jones. He really struggled in that game. And my son actually made the comments like, it's how well he played to start the year. And then he played the one game at right tackle. He went back to guard and he couldn't do anything. I think, I will say this, as well as Max Garcia's played at center, I think not having Rodney Hudson there is one reason why Josh Jones struggled a little bit. And young offensive linemen are going to struggle sometimes. And let's be honest, the Texans do have talented players. Malik Collins is not a nobody. He's big, he's athletic, and they just turned a bad team. So he's going to go through that. And the Cardinals knew that going. They said he's going to have, this is first time really ever playing guard. He's going to have growing pains. That said, when you look at it, I thought he was the only one who had a bad game on that team.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's two things to it. I think, one, you hit on the first one. It's hard for I know he's not a rookie, but basically a guy in his rookie season to come out and start at one position with a veteran, or actually two veterans next to you, right? I mean, you've got Rodney Hudson on one side, Kelvin Beachum on the other. Then flop out to the right tackle spot for, was it three games?
I think it was two games, I think.
Yeah, two games, two or three games, whatever it was. And then have to go back inside, and now you lose, well, that veteran that was kind of helping you along the way. And so the struggles the last two games, I'm not really surprised about. I'm not. It's a long season. It's his first season as a starter in the NFL, and he's been tasked with playing two positions with two different guys, manning the position next to him, which is, as we've seen, can make a huge difference on the team. You know, we talked about getting, and you hate to say this, but getting, out from Mason Cole and getting a Rodney Hudson, and wow, how different it is, right?
Well, it's very interesting because they changed. Like, not only did they just up, they went a completely different philosophy with the center position. Because if you look at the guys that they drafted over the last few years, they drafted Evan Bain, then they drafted Mason Cole, and then they drafted Lamont Gilliard. And then they completely changed, and they said, okay, we want someone up front who is big and physical, Rodney Hudson. And then they moved Max Garcia to center full-time, even though he hadn't really played center in the pros. Two big, strong guys. And they completely changed how they approached the center position, which is kind of fun to see. Some growth and some changes, just a little bit of development in how they changed what they looked at.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, when you have a guy like Kyler, where I know we hear the jokes a lot about how short he is, but let's be honest, when a guy is getting pushed back into the quarterback, it makes it really difficult for him to step up and make plays. So, having a stronger anchor there, and there will always be a difference when you have a guy like Rodney versus a Max Garcia, even though Max Garcia is a very talented.
And he's done really, like, aside from a
few. Yeah, he's played extremely.
His blocking and his line play has been really good.
But there's a difference, you know, when you play next to one guy versus the other. So, yeah, I mean, I thought this game really came out to the fact that we've now are seeing that this team. And we've talked about it a little bit, but this team can win in a number of ways. And, you know, we've seen them win a big game over the over the Rams, where they just, you know, go out and flat out just dominate a team that everybody says is, you know, the top Super Bowl contending team in the NFL after they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then, you know, you see them go into Cleveland with some adversity and just flat out dominate that team, right? Like, and but then you've seen them play games where, yeah, they started out really slowly and they weren't necessarily playing well, or, and I don't know if it was a lack of focus on the offense, trying, and we know this is something that they do sometimes, trying too hard to get a new guy in Zach Ertz heavily involved instead of letting the game kind of come to him.
Well, game plan wise against that team, I thought what they would have done is simply, we're going to run the ball early, and but that they didn't do running plays at all. It's like Cliff in his time off almost overthought things to start the game.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to put it. Like, they came out, I think, you know, getting Cliff back, adding Zach Ertz, and they were like, hey, we, you know, let's make a statement. Instead of, yeah, letting the game kind of come to them and getting out there early and getting ahead early. And so, you know, you have that, and they end up, you know, like we said, the last three quarters just, I mean, throttling a team. Just to the point where it was
like hot knife through butter for the rest of the game, pretty much.
Right. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's hard to come up with a lot of negatives. In fact, I think the big negatives were we just didn't get to see enough of, you know, DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt.
Exactly.
Because they were beating them so bad, they're like, well, we don't have to play these guys as much.
Yeah, it was great to see.
Or we don't need to throw to, you know, DeAndre very much. And yeah, like it's kind of crazy to think about, and then watch, and then you see the snap counts, especially for JJ, because, you know, we've discussed this a little bit, that it really does seem like they're playing him. I don't know if it's because they've been banged up so badly along the defensive line, playing him more than they wanted to, but then they came into this game and it was almost like they just were like, hey, this is too easy. I mean, this was his lowest snap percentage. They didn't have a ton of snaps in the game. I think, 56 on defense anyways. And he, you know, he only played
30 of them.
30. Yeah. I mean, like, it's crazy to see that after, you know, every game he's been above 70 when we were told, you know, 65. And we do know Cliff lies a lot.
Well, and also JJ's a factor in that, because he's a guy, you know, you don't have to tell him sick him. You have to tell him whoa. And so you have to insist, JJ, you're coming out now. JJ, you're doing this now. And he loves being coached, but he will, like, if he's not reined in, he will go all out. That's what he's done his entire career.
Yeah, and so you look at it like Kyler threw a bad pass, right? One bad pass. I mean, like, literally, it's one of those games where it's 31-5 and it probably should have been 40-3.
Right. I will say that one of the things that's annoying is that NFL officiating is like, what is Kyler starting to get some quarterback treatment that there's other times. There's been a missed face mask, I think, almost every single week. And that's the one thing. I'm like, yeah, they're like against Cleveland, the one time that he kind of got shoved after the fact, like they're trying to get that stuff out of there. It's unnecessary, the roughness. And I know it's pretty boy football. It's flag football. You know, some of the stuff that would fly back in the day. I mean, they would do that for any quarterback if he just does that. And then they just give him an extra shove, even though he's out of harm's way. But the face mask, you gotta do that. I didn't think, honestly, the safety was a safety. I think he got the ball out and that they missed the face mask too. So that shouldn't have even been a thing. So
right,
there wouldn't have had the 2 points, which therefore then would not have had the ensuing field goal because it came after the safety punt, because it should have been a first down on a personal foul penalty, and they probably go down and score. And you know what? Honestly, it might have been a shutout if the referee, if the officials make the correct call in that play in particular. I will say one thing that the Texans did kind of all right is that they were disciplined enough, and I think it's a balance. You have to have the right personnel to do it. They were really good about not letting Kyler get free. And so they ended up having a couple of really bad, and if there's one thing that will be a bugaboo for the Cardinals offense that will really stop it in their tracks, is getting them off schedule. You know, bad sacks, because he gets Kyler, because of his capability, will get hit with, you know, a 10 to a 15 loss sack, and those really put you behind things. This offense, if it's on schedule, no one can stop it. But if you get behind schedule, that's when things get a little troubling. And that's really kind of the only thing. If you can create a couple of really bad negative plays, that's where things can get weird. And I think the Texans, at least up front, did a really good job of really corralling Kyler, and that there were times you saw him get frustrated because he thought he'd break free and they'd get him. We know he's faster than everyone on the field, but if there is a blueprint in terms of how to do that for to avoid his escapability, it's to stay disciplined and not over pursue, which is easier said than done.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, teams this year have done a nice job against Kyler in that situation, and I think they're baiting him to win from the pocket more consistently, and he's been up to the challenge.
He is more than okay for doing. That's what he wants to do.
Right. And so from that perspective, I think it's okay. I think it's a good thing because it's showing his development, and now you're going to see a guy, you know, similar to what we're seeing with Lamar Jackson right now. Now you're going to see a guy that is basically unstoppable. And if you're, you know, if you're having to play him straight up and traditionally, then we know he can beat you with his legs. If you're having to play him like they are right now, where they're trying to contain him in the pocket and force him to make plays from the pocket, well, again, he's been doing that more consistently and recently. So it's hard to say what's the best way to beat him. And right now, I don't know what the answer is, because he hasn't given you that answer yet this year.
Yeah. It's really impressive offensively, because the Cardinals they're averaging 136. I think it's 115 rushing yards a year. So they're up there in rushing, but this year, like, they're averaging like, what, 115 yards a game or whatever, and Kyler Murray is accounting for 18 of those yards per game. He's almost been non-existent in the run game, except for those, you know, he had those early touchdowns, but they weren't from very far out. They're getting really good rushing production just from their running backs, and which is perfect. It's perfect. Then it becomes where his running can be simply a luxury, but There was so much to like. He had some incredible throws. I'm continuing to be impressed with their ability in end of game and end of half scenarios, that they do them almost perfectly. They managed the end of half really well. Doesn't matter whether they're trying to use up all the clock or they're in hurry up. At the end of the half, it seems like every game they put themselves in the position for points. And then at the end of game as well, they're just able to mow down clock. And when teams know they're going to run the ball, they still run the ball and run the ball successfully. And so they mow down clock. And so they're winning. Basically, their game management, and this is a testament to Cliff as a coach, their game management has been great. So they speed it up when they need to, and they can slow it down and grind it out. They're kind of doing everything well.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the two things that we've seen is that their defense is giving them an opportunity to make plays on offense, and then the offense is taking advantage of those before the half, as you said. And now they have a, you know, I think one of the underrated aspects of this season, because they have been winning by a lot, is how well Matt Prater's has been playing. And, you know, it's changed things, because if you, and I know the 67-yarder didn't go in, or 68-yarder, whatever it was. But when you go back, when you have a guy that you say, hey, we just got to get to the, what, 50?
Basically 50, the 45.
The 45, and we'll have a shot. And that's a tough offense to stop, because you're just talking about 30 yards. I mean, you just have to get 30 yards, and you can do that in, you know, two plays in this offense with all the receiving weapons they have. And so I think all of that has made them a more complete offense, and an offense that's harder and harder to stop.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's come back and talk about the injury scenario. So the Cardinals have some big names on the injury report, including a player that's not necessarily a big name, but super important right now. Let's talk about it next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals preparing for the Green Bay Packers this week in Week 8. They play Thursday night, and so their injury report began on Monday. And some notable names on it. One, Kyler Murray is on there with a right finger injury. And he's full, so it's no need to worry about in terms of missing time. But J.J. Watt's on there with the shoulder. DeAndre Hopkins with the hamstring. I'm not worried about DeAndre Hopkins so much. And then the one-eye opener, Max Garcia missing 2 days of practice thus far with an Achilles injury when they don't have Rodney Hudson. Because if Max Garcia is not starting at center, you've got a dude named Sean Harwell. Harlow.
I was going to say, it's Harlow, right?
Yeah.
He got the last five snaps in the game.
Yeah, so he's got a little bit of reps. And when he came in for Pugh again in Jacksonville, he played really well. But I didn't know he played center. I knew he was a guard. I didn't know he could play center. And he is apparently their backup center now. So the really, for me, I have my eye on J.J. Watt because, you know, if we want to go, you know, conspiracy a little bit, J.J. didn't play towards the end of the game. And I know they did. I know they rested him. But they didn't announce him. And it felt that he came out earlier than some of the other starters like Jordan Hicks and Buda Baker and Byron Murphy. But they didn't report anything, so they didn't say he had a shoulder injury, question return, so they didn't make an announcement. But when it showed up on the injury report, I was like, well, maybe he came out partially because of that. That and Max Garcia. I mean, Max Garcia not starting at center to me is – that's something to worry about. It's a problem because now it's not – it's not just the drop-off from Hudson to Garcia. You're now dipping into the depth that you don't have trust in. The coaching staff believes – so the Cardinals' offensive line room, they've got eight players. They got eight players that they believe in who essentially could be starters, because you've got Justin Murray, you've got Max Garcia – and there's seven. So that's seven players on their offensive line in the offensive line room. They would say, okay, any of those guys could be starters. They'd be comfortable there. But now you don't have Roddy Hudson. You don't have Justin Murray. And if Max Garcia goes down, now you're dipping into the players. You're like, well, I hope he holds up.
Yeah, and I do wonder, I think we'll know more if they activate or elevate Michael Minette, right? Because isn't he back on the practice squad?
I think he got bumped, though they brought in. So maybe they're not that concerned because Marcus Henry, a center who was on their practice squad earlier this year and was in training camp, he came in for a visit on Monday but did not sign. So okay. I'm pretty sure Minette is no longer on the roster. I think that one was short-lived, if I recall. But yeah, let me check that roster. 98% sure he was cut about a week after he came back. Practice squad. No Minette. Nope.
Okay. So they have no center on the practice squad right now.
It would appear that way.
Yeah, Isadora, and they've already...
Zach Johnson's a tackle, isn't he?
Yeah, and they've already brought in guys this week, so I would guess that means that they're comfortable with Garcia.
They knew, so basically, he's hurt enough that you're like, okay, we're not going to practice Monday, Tuesday, but Wednesday he'll probably be limited and be good to go. Kind of like they've handled Kelvin Beachum the last 2 weeks. Kind of like how they handled Justin Pugh for a couple of weeks as well. Is that he's on the injury report and it looks bad, but they're just like, okay, yeah, we know you're going to play, so we know you're going to play because you're not going to practice for 2 days.
Yeah, and so the Watt one is going to be interesting to see where he ends up if because they, and I know they like their depth along the defensive line, but they also cut a defensive lineman, or not cut, but that was the one move they made on the practice squad, was they released
Ledbetter,
a defensive lineman, yeah, and brought in two defensive backs. And typically they do that type of stuff when they have, you know, an injury concern and they might have to elevate somebody on game day. So again, I mean, we're just reading between the lines of what they typically do, right? And so it's not for sure by any means.
Well, and but... plus they got Jordan Phillips back. They got Zach Allen back, and then and Josh Morrow is on the practice squad, and so you kind of have like the what you have on the roster are like the three dimensions of JJ Watt. You've got JJ Watt, JJ Watt, and then you've got the Zach Allen, who's kind of like he's the same type of player, but not quite. And then you've got Josh Morrow, who's the store-bought brand version of Zach Allen, who's kind of the store-bought brand version of J.J. Watt.
Okay. Correct. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where this plays out this week. But, yeah, I mean, injuries are always a concern. It's the biggest concern we've had about this team all year, right? I mean, between Robert Alford and J.J. And then on offense, you know, we weren't concerned about Rodney Hudson because I don't think he'd miss a game in his career with the Raiders. But we were worried about the depth of the offensive line in general. And so now, you know, as attrition happens throughout the season, you're getting into that. And I think that's where you're going to define how good this team really is.
Absolutely. Coming next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals went through it. Now the Packers are going through it. Cardinals lost key players and coaches to COVID protocols. Now the Packers are doing it. Let's talk about what that means for the significance of that game. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Cardinals are starting to get their players back. So they got their head coach back. Cliff Kingsbury was back in the building on Sunday. He was able to coach the game. Cam Turner came back. I'm assuming Steve Keim is back by this point. Chandler Jones has come off the COVID list. So has Zach Allen. All that's left is Corey Peters. And so they're basically at full strength again. They dealt with two games without Chandler. They dealt with two games without Zach Allen. They dealt with a game without Cliff Kingsbury. But now the Packers have had it happen to them. Defensive coordinator Joe Barry out with COVID. Devontae Adams hit the COVID list on Monday, making it highly unlikely that he is available to play on Thursday night. And then on Tuesday, on top of that, their number two receiver, Alan Lazard, guaranteed out for this game because he's, according to Ian Rappaport, an unvaccinated player who was ruled to have close contact with Adams, meaning that he is out a minimum of 5 days before, and so they manage watch symptoms and continue to test to make sure he doesn't test positive. And so the Cardinals are going to face a Packers team without their two top receivers, and not just any top two receivers, Davante Adams, who had been entering week seven, was tied for the lead in receptions and led the league in receiving yards, and now is tied for second and then in his third in those categories. Cooper Kupp is pacing to, you know, set an NFL record this year for the Rams. The question now becomes this. Does the loss of Adams and Lazard now change how you view this game?
You know, it doesn't for me, just because that's the way the NFL works, and each week is its own thing, and each week is its own entity. And the Cardinals have had, to your point, had to deal with issues. Chandler Jones out, being without Zach Allen and Chandler Jones in the same game against the Cleveland Browns, right? I mean, the Houston Texans, whatever, but the Cleveland Browns. And then the fact that, yeah, it is their top two receivers, and they're already missing, you know, their real number two receiver, and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, or
I think that's Scantling Valdez. Well, that guy, that other guy.
Yeah. And, he, you know, he's been out, and so it's just the attrition of the season, and it's the unfortunate reality of where we're at now with, you know, COVID just being kind of an X factor in some games, right?
Yeah. And it's, I will say this, it's,
I wanted to see this team.
Right. That's the thing. It's like, I thought that the Cardinals could beat the Packers anyway. Yeah, but now in terms of, for me, it doesn't matter. As a fan, I want to stack wins and I want to win ball games. So it's nice when another team has stuff happen to them, because it makes it easier to win. However, this game in particular was going to be a nice measuring stick to see, okay, if you've got a full, healthy Packers squad, this is a playoff preview. What's it going to look like? Is it a back and forth? Do they dominate? Are they going to be overmatched? Are they going to have one of those stinker games? But now, I mean, at least for the national things, they're like, well, to me, this is almost like that 2016 game opener when Tom Brady was suspended. Coming into this season against the Patriots, Jimmy Garoppolo, it was almost a no-win scenario for the Cardinals, because, one, if you win, you were supposed to win because they were missing Tom Brady. Two, if you lose, which ultimately happened, it set their season into a tailspin, because then they started questioning who they were. I don't think it's going to happen to this team, but, you know, they're 7-0 and they hit into this game. If they win, no one's going to be like, that was fantastic because they didn't have Davante Adams. They're like, well, yeah, you should have beaten them because they didn't have Davante Adams. If they lose, then they're like, oh, see, they aren't who we think they are.
Right, and that's the unfortunate part about it for the Cardinals, is it is a situation where it's kind of lose-lose, and so in that case, just win the game and let people continue to dismiss your wins. You know, it was interesting today, and then he kind of corrected himself afterwards, and so not to, like, call him out or anything, but on Tuesday, Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders said, you know, I'm bummed about Thursday night. A real test for the Arizona defense would have been great. Instead, we're going to throw back to one of those 2020, hey, an entire position group got wiped out by COVID games. And you look at it and you say, well,
what were the Titans, Rams, or yeah, Browns? Chopped liver?
And you ask, and then, you know, then they clarify and they say, oh, you know, we just meant as opposed to the Texans. But I get that. But that is let's be honest, that's the initial takeaway. People come into the game expecting the Cardinals to fall flat on their face. They expect that, yeah, they're 7-0, but I mean, they haven't really beat anybody except for those teams. I mean, but, you know, those teams were, and then you get the excuses. Like
the Cleveland didn't have Nick Chubb, and the Titans, it was week one.
Yeah. And so you look at it, just keep winning games and people can't say anything. And that's absolutely the way you have to look at it.
Absolutely. And you know, it doesn't matter, because in the playoffs you can be missing players too. After all, Cardinals fans know very well they started a playoff game with Ryan Lindley. No one should have to endure that at all. The Rams started a game with they started a game with John Wolford, who got hurt. Like that, there's just things you can't foresee. That it just happens that way. And so, whether it's now, whether it's later, I think, you know, you'd like the most premier marquee matchup you can in this scenario with the Cardinals playing as well as they do or have been, but you can't apologize for wins. You can't apologize for wins, especially with the resume the Cardinals already have, because they have already blown out 3 playoff teams from last year. They have scored over 30 points in 6 of 7 games. They've allowed 20 or fewer points in 6 of 7 games, and they've done that against 3 teams that were in the playoffs a year ago, and one who is now playing. That the win over Minnesota looks better. Like, the win over Tennessee looks fantastic now. The win over Minnesota looks better and better each week. They are taking care of business against everyone. And
don't they have the second or third, no, maybe it's 6th now, but like best DVOA schedule. Like, it's not like they're just,
I don't know anything about the DVOA schedule, but let me look at it. Like, they're number one in points allowed. They have the number one scoring defense in the league right now. They have a top 5 scoring offense. They're number one in third down defense now. They're number one in fourth down defense. So not only in percentage, but also in defensive stops. So they're number 3 in turnovers, number 1 in forced fumbles. And then you add those turnovers that they've created to the 12 fourth down stops. They're now 20 turnovers forced by the Cardinals defense. And then you have Kyler Murray, who's playing at an MVP level. They're averaging 115 yards per game offensively, without Kyler producing much in the run game at all. You've got 3 guys that are either on pace for or just shy of a 1,000-yard pace for the season. Right now, there's 4 players paced for over 800 yards receiving. These are bonkers numbers. You just go across the board statistically. Every single statistic you can rattle off is stupid. How good it is going for the Cardinals right now. And so I don't apologize for wins no matter what. This isn't smoke and mirrors. This is a different team than that 4-0 Cardinals team that fell apart. This is a different team than the Carolina Panthers that went 3-0. This is a different team than that Denver Broncos team this year that went 3-0. This team has no weaknesses, and they will lose a game at some point this year, and probably multiple games, and maybe even a losing streak, and people will wonder, oh, are the Cardinals done? But they are a complete team, and that's, you know, it is a sad, you know, in terms of viewership and meaningfulness, but ultimately, it doesn't matter how they do it, but they're going to knock off, hopefully, a playoff team. So that puts them in the driver's seat because, again, now against the Rams, they're guaranteed not to lose a tiebreaker to them head-to-head. They beat the Packers. They own the tiebreaker over the – and then they'll really only have one other team to in the NFC to worry about that with, and that's the Cowboys. And they play – they face off at the end of the year this year. So it's fantastic. But, no, I mean, as a fan – I'm happy Davante Adams out because I want my team spit. But in terms of big picture, we are missing a little something.
Yeah, and we, I mean, you just have to accept that you're going to miss out on what could have been a marquee matchup. But you can't put anything past Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that dude almost beat the 2015 Cardinals with, like, Jeff Janis and some other guys as his top weapons, right? Like, he's unbelievable. So you're gonna get a heavy dose of Aaron, I think, on Thursday night, and the team better be ready for it.
Yep, it absolutely. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's wrap up the show and talk about specifically the matchups we want to see, that we're going to see against the Packers, our predictions, our picks, and all that stuff. That's our preview coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals host the Green Bay Packers on Thursday night at State Farm Stadium in front of the entire nation as it is the nationally televised game. What matchups? Oh, first off, we are being robbed a couple of important matchups. We already know the Devontae Adams, Byron Murphy, and Marco Wilson against Devontae Adams. But David Bakhtiari, not expected to be back yet. And Chandler Jones returns. And so we do have, actually, I'm super intrigued by both the edge matchups because you've got Chandler Jones against Elgin Jenkins. And then on the other side, you've got Marcus Golden, who's got 4 sacks in his last 2 games, now leads the team in 6. Overall, going against Billy Turner. Golden is playing fantastically, and to think that that dude signed for 2 years and $5 million total, I am just floored at that contract compared to what the production he's getting, because guess what? We knew this is exactly the type of production we were going to get from Marcus Golden, right?
Yeah, and you know, he's your prototype, you know, edge two type of player, and being able to be the kind of third best pass rusher on this defense has made him even better. And while he's been more of the, you know, edge two or pass rusher two most of the season because of the of Chandler Jones missing some time, he's really stepped up. And I think, you know, this is clearly advantage Arizona, even if JJ is limited or out, because those edge positions are tough. Elgin Jenkins is a fantastic interior offensive lineman, but man, he's been having to move around quite a bit, and it makes it tough, right? to have to come out and try to defend or try to stop Chandler Jones and protect Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers is fantastic though. We know as, from an escape standpoint. So when you look at that, it'll be interesting to see how he plays overall. But, you know, I think this is a big advantage for the Cardinals. The one concern, or the biggest concern you have, is if JJ is out, that lessens your rotations, obviously. But it also gives you a little pause when it comes to stopping Aaron Jones, because you haven't seen, you know, a lot of Jordan Phillips yet, and we've talked about before, his strength isn't really ever been as a run stopper. And JJ's played very well this year against the run, as well as, you know, being a pass rusher. And so that becomes more of a concern this week for me, because you have to imagine Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon are going to be getting a bulk of the carries, right?
You'd think so. But if the Cardinals get a lead.
Yeah, and that's been the best. And not that they're playing poorly against the run. They've had some issues.
But that's their best defense. That's their best run defense, is their offense.
Right, and so that's what you look at. Overall, and you know, I just think that with the matchup as it is, without Devontae Adams, without Alan Lazard, and you know, Marquez Valdez-Scantling still out, this is a really good opportunity for the Arizona Cardinals once again to kind of assert themselves as the better team. Full health head to head. You know, that includes David Bakhtiari back. Like, I think this is a fantastic game. I think it's a game that is a coin flip. But the way they come into this game, and you know, the betting line agrees with it. The Cardinals opened at 4-point favorites, and they're at 6.5 as of this recording, which is Tuesday night. I mean, a 2.5-point move in basically 24 hours is a lot for those that don't do gambling. That's basically, you know, a field goal move. And
how much Devontae Adams, the difference of having a Devontae and not having Devontae in the lineup.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of expectation that the Cardinals are going to be able to control this game, as just said, because the other thing that we, you know, haven't mentioned, and that's because they're really freaking good at it now, is tight ends. And Robert Tonyan was going to be an issue, right? Coming into the season, it was one of those matchups to watch, a guy that had played, you know, extremely well, that really burst onto the scene. And now you look at it, and the Cardinals defense is just completely dominating tight ends.
Yeah. Here's the stat that I ran across on Twitter. It's they haven't allowed more. They've allowed fewer than 20 yards to tight ends, to any tight end, in 5 of their 7 games, and they haven't allowed more than 40 in a game. And I think that right there, Isaiah Simmons effect is right there, because of his ability to play. And I'll say this, Isaiah Simmons is having a fantastic season, even though he does not have fantastic numbers. What he does for this defense is really, and I haven't loved the way they've used him, because they use him a lot on the edge right now, especially with Chandler out. But you can't argue the results. His role is super important to this defense, and he's doing a really good job in every single role he's being asked to play.
Yeah, and that's all you can really ask from him. And again, I've said, I don't think it's always fair, right, for him to have to do so much. And so now you look at it, and he's answering the bell. His weak spot is still when he's kind of inside playing as a true linebacker, right? But that's just because that's all reps. I mean, at the end of the day, to be a really good linebacker, you have to see a lot of, or inside linebackers, you have to see a lot of plays. You have to read a lot of defenses, and you have to become instinctual attacking downhill. And the fact that Isaiah Simmons is a great player at everything else he's being asked to do, and an above average linebacker, I think that's a huge win for the Cardinals defense this year.
Absolutely. And that's with, you know, Jordan Hicks playing better. But I know another matchup too that we didn't get to see last time. So Preston Smith, if you've been listening to this show for a long time, Preston Smith is a player that we both believe should have been a Cardinal years ago when he drafted. Now, he's definitely not the same player he was, but he is expected to be back from injury this week. He missed the game against Washington this past weekend. He missed against Washington. And so he and Rashawn Gary are a presence on the edge, and it'll be interesting to see how he does. Kenny Clark, That matchup, especially if Max isn't 100%, keep an eye on Kenny Clark at the center, over center, to see how he plays as well. Because Rodney Hudson, fantastic this season. Max Garcia has been great with his blocking. Kenny Clark is a very good player and could cause some problems.
Yeah, and you know, you have to watch that, because that is concerned about, is Kenny Clark on the inside is playing really, really well. And for the Cardinals, they're going to have to protect Kyler, as they have most of the season. But the last couple games without Rodney, it's been a little bit more of a struggle. Would you not agree?
Yeah.
And so that's one of those games where, you know, Max Garcia on that injured reserve, or not injured reserve, on the injury report, is always, you know, going to be worrisome. And then you're just going to sit and watch and see, like, hey, where is this, you know, where is this going to be at? Is he going to be 100%? How's he going to look? You know, they're a talented little defensive front. Rashawn Gary's playing extremely well. Kenny Clark, as you mentioned, on the interior. Dean Lowry's having a decent season as well. And so they've got some guys that are playing well. And you should be able to take advantage of their non-Jair Alexander cornerbacks. You should be able to put pressure on them. Eric Stokes has not been bad as a rookie corner, but I think that he hasn't had to deal with the amount of weapons that the Cardinals play with. And that's, you know, that's not us being homers. That's just realistic. Like, this team is talented, and they have a lot of weapons that they can throw at a cornerback like Eric Stokes and really kind of mess with him. And I think you're going to see that this week, because while Jair Alexander is one of the premier corners in the NFL, it's fun to go pick on rookie corners. And, you know, the Cardinals have been very happy with theirs in Marco Wilson. And part of the reason you think, you know, or you say to yourself that the Cardinals got a break is, you know, Davante Adams, Allen Lazard, and Valdez Scantling are a nice trio of corners, but they're not, you know, or of wide receivers, but they're not DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, Christian Kirk, and oh yeah, Rondale Moore as well. So, you know, and he's, and like I said, Stokes has had some nice games. He had good games against New Orleans and Detroit and Washington. Terry McLaurin's a good corner, but I'd have to go back and watch. So I don't want to speak like completely out of turn, but I would expect that Jair Alexander probably was on McLaurin a little bit or most of the game. But you know, he struggled against San Francisco. He struggled against Pittsburgh, against Cincinnati, and against Chicago that have decent 1-2 punches. And you know, like I said, the Cardinals offer a really strong three-man, you know, punch, and really four, and now with Zach Ertz, maybe five in the passing game. So
yeah, it's really kind of ridiculous what exactly the Cardinals have, the weapons that they have. So how do you see this game playing out? My original prediction, expecting even Davante Adams in the lineman, I had the Cardinals winning this game 31-27. I had them getting a lead, Green Bay rallying, but ultimately falling short, not because Aaron Rodgers fell short, only the Cardinals were able to keep the ball away from him. But I think I'm going to lean towards the kind of the double digit win, and we're going to see a 31-20 or 31-21 win instead, where, you know, they're kind of in it, but the Cardinals are in control most of the game.
Yeah. And I think this is a game where you're going to see the talent of Aaron Rodgers in that annoying sense where he keeps them in the game. But I think the Arizona Cardinals end up pulling away in this one. I'm going to say 34-24 Cardinals, where it feels like it's closer than it is, but like the game was never really in the balance. But it just, it's annoying because Aaron Rodgers is so stinking good, and you're like, come on, just pull away from this guy. Like, let's go. But so we'll see, man. Cause like when you look at it, the Packers have been offensively really, I don't want to say average, because they had the obviously one awful game against the New Orleans Saints to open the season. But the last four games, they're averaging right around 25 points, which is right. Their season average is 24, so 25 would put them right at 14th in the league scoring. They just don't seem to be as dynamic this year, and a lot of that, you know, has to do with the injuries, and some of it does have to do with the injuries along the offensive line. And I think that's been something that the Cardinals should be able to take advantage of and really, you know, keep the Packers right at their season average, maybe slightly below, and the Cardinals be right at their season average for scoring, and really kind of play out the way you would expect it to on paper.
And I will say, I do think that there is more than just an outside chance, potentially, for this to be almost a repeat of New Orleans, Green Bay. I think if the Cardinals can start hot, it will, because this is not like the 49ers team that let them back in the game. Because of how good the Cardinals defense, I'm not going to predict that it'll happen, but honestly, I wouldn't be surprised in this particular scenario if things got off the rails a little bit for the Packers.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this game plays out, because I think the Cardinals are looking to they've really bought into this one game at a time mentality, right? And this whole 1-0 idea. And I think that helps them focus, and it will help them focus in this game where you look at it and you say, we're coming to make another statement that even though there are some injuries but COVID, yeah, there are some injuries as well, that we are the best team in the NFL, and we're going to prove that each and every week. And, you know, they've done that. And I think that they're going to continue to look to push in that direction, and they'll do that again this week.
And with that, we will bring this edition of the show to an end. Obviously, the game is going to be on Thursday nights, so you're going to have to wait for us till, you know, nearly a week later so we can talk about what happened during the game, unless something is vitally, you know, important. We have to do something before then. But hopefully in a week from now, we are talking about an 8-0 Cardinals team who then go on the road to face the San Francisco 49ers for the second and final time this year. So on behalf of the Rise of the Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening as always. Go Cardinals, and we'll be back on the air again next week. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red. Whoa!